It is time for us to get together with Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Of course, Arthur joins us on a Monday morning, and we talk about food. Good morning, Arthur. Hope you had a great weekend.
Was it the weekend?
Well, I looked at this Thanksgiving weekend.
As somebody who doesn't work and in the middle of a lockdown for COVID, every day seems the same. So, and also you get to a certain age and you wake up in the morning and you have to remind yourself what day it is. So that's where I am. And it's Monday, I know that because I'm on the radio. yes, I had a nice weekend. Thursday, Thanksgiving, was a bit of a disaster. As I promised, I did have spaghetti alla carbonara for Thanksgiving meal at midday, and I did have a blackout cake cupcake, a large cupcake, and this is because carbohydrates are my real treat, I think. I've been on, as anybody who listens to this program knows, I've been on the keto diet. It's an almost carbless diet, the no-carb diet or super-duper low-carb diet, since Labor Day. And I have lost 20 pounds, I can report today. So it works, about a pound and a half a week, much slower than I expected, because this is supposedly one of those quick weight loss diets. Now, I have a friend who listens to this podcast in Maryland, and actually D.C., and he apparently is getting the advice of a nutritionist and is sort of not debunking this diet, but, you know, is wondering about it. And he said, but is it sustainable? And as somebody who has dieted their entire life, you can attest to this, Marshall. No diet is sustainable.
No, absolutely not.
if you're a fat guy, as I am, when I met Bob, it's interesting. I was very, very, I was the slimmest I ever was in my life. And I warned him right off. I said, you know, I'm a fat guy in temporarily slim body. And I always knew it was temporary. And although I would swear once I lost weight that I would never gain it back, it happened. So it, for various reasons, human reasons. So I have lost weight, and I have gotten accustomed to this regimen, and it is, because it doesn't include all the food groups. And by the way, in consulting my endocrinologist about this, after she noted that whatever I was doing was amazing for my numbers, including my diabetes numbers, she said, look, you eliminate a food group, you'll lose weight. So I just got off the phone with a friend in Italy who, a mutual friend of ours, American but also living in Italy, he's on a low-fat diet. And he's losing weight. So, you know, and I'm on a high-fat diet, and I'm losing weight, and I think my endocrinologist is right. Calories count, and you eliminate a food group, you've eliminated calories. So I'm trudging along here, getting used to this protein and above-ground vegetable diet, and which just allows a lot of things that I love, actually. But I needed to have pasta. So I ate my pie. First of all, I only made 4 ounces each. We're only two here. So it was a pretty rich carbonara. And I'm always fiddling with my carbonara, the number of egg yolks. This was a half a pound of pasta, 8 ounces of pasta for two people, which is a little more than I was eating regularly when I was on the pasta lover's diet. You weren't allowed that much pasta. You were only allowed 3 ounces at most, depending on what you were eating it with. And so 4 ounces of pasta, eight ounces of pasta, I used 4 ounces of pancetta, diced very fine, and I used a significant amount of Parmigiano, which I beat, it was probably about a half a cup, which I beat into two whole eggs and one egg yolk. That makes a pretty rich sauce for the carbonara. So I, with the fat in the pan from the pancetta, it's very rich. And then I add a little pasta cooking water to thin this out, make it work, and coat the pasta. So I actually gave, since my appetite, and this, by the way, is a byproduct of the keto diet, they do say, if you read up on it, that you will eventually lose your appetite. And so don't worry about calories, because you won't be eating many calories because you won't have a lot of appetite. So that's happened to me. I have a significantly smaller appetite than I did. And so I gave Bob a little bit more pasta, and he has a big appetite, even though he's on this diet too. But he cheats so much, it's not, he hasn't gotten to that period where he has no appetite. For instance, he has a high-carb breakfast every day. I don't. I mean, he has cereal and a banana. So I gave him a little bit more, and you know what? I couldn't even finish mine. So I ate probably no more than 3 ounces of pasta. And then I had this cupcake, and then I got sick. Now, I mean, I wasn't severely sick, except that I did have severe gas pains. It took me a few minutes to realize they were just gas pains. And I walked around a bit, and they dissipated after a bit. And I was just didn't feel well the rest of the day. So I didn't eat a thing the rest of the day. And the next day, I was sort of happy to be back on my keto diet of vegetables and protein. So I don't know. My friend in Italy, who's on the low-fat diet, ate a lot of fat on Thanksgiving. Of course, several Americans got together and had Thanksgiving in Rome. And he got sick from eating too much fat on Thanksgiving, which his body is not accustomed to. I think it's really, my body is not accustomed to the carbohydrates. And I have to ask my endocrinologist next time I see her. She seems to know more about these things, and truthfully, than most nutritionists. But a nutritionist will tell you the same thing. You eliminate a food group, whether it be fat or starch, and you're going to lose weight. By the way, I don't know if there are any diets that limit protein. I wonder.
I don't know, but you're right, though, because whenever I lose weight, I've eliminated French fries and stuff like that. I will not eat anything fried outside, okay? If I'm at somebody's house and they fry something, I'll eat it. But if I go into a McDonald's or Burger King or something like that, I start to get nauseous because you can smell the heavy grease from the fryers. And that's because I eliminated having anything like that.
Ah, interesting.
So your body does adjust. It does.
Yeah, I think your body adjusts.
Yeah.
So what you know, what it's adjusting to is not bad, actually. I mean, I really do miss. I'll tell you something. The next indulgence is a pastrami on rye. I've had the pastrami because that's totally allowed on the keto diet. But eating pastrami, you know, without the rye bread, it's good. If it's good pastrami, it's good pastrami. But I really do want it on rye bread. Really. Anyway, so I've been making, I like variety. The person I cook for, Bob Harned, does not need variety in his life, but I need variety. I mean, I could make the same thing every day, and if he liked it, he wouldn't care. And in fact, there are certain things that I am making a lot of these days because he loves it. And I like it. And krauty, I mentioned that a few weeks ago, this braised cabbage with pancetta. But I have been making what I call a chicken sauté. Now, when I say sauté, chicken sauté, I'm referring to what the French would call a chicken sauté, because that's what I learned as a young person. And only this morning, I was looking up chicken sauté on the internet just to see what I would find. And it was interesting because what I found was not what I cook as a chicken sauté. What I found was sautéed chicken, meaning you take a white meat chicken breast and put it in a pan with butter or oil. That's not what I mean. What I mean is braised chicken. And to me, the best parts to braise are the thighs and drumsticks. breasts, to me, don't make it as a braise, but if you only eat white meat chicken, you can do this with white meat chicken as well. I mean, if you were a thrifty person, you would probably make a whole chicken that you cut up yourself and do the whole chicken and in pieces. But it's definitely a method for cooking chicken in pieces. And these days we can buy pieces, and I love chicken thighs, so I do this mostly with chicken thighs. Occasionally I'll throw in a few drumsticks. So what I do is this. I put, now it depends on what flavor you want at the end, what fat you use to first brown the chicken, and then what liquid and seasonings you add after the chicken has been browned. So it is basically, I mean, the word braise technically means to cook in a little bit of fat and then add a liquid so that the item being braised, it cooks in moisture. And it's the same thing with the chicken. So I brown the chicken. Let's say I'm going to, my basic one is a white wine based sauce. These, by the way, this is going to be chicken with a good sauce. So I'm going to do the most basic, and then we can talk about variations. The most basic for me is I brown the chicken in olive oil. Olive oil has a high burning point, so it doesn't burn. Canola oil, if you want something bland, you can use any kind of vegetable oil instead of olive oil, but I cook mainly with olive oil. Don't use butter because butter will burn unless you happen to have clarified butter. I do in the refrigerator, ghee, Indian ghee. You could use that too, but I like olive oil. So I salt and pepper the chicken thighs on both sides generously, and I put the chicken, once the, in this case, heat the oil in the pan. And I use not a no-stick pan for this. I like the browning ability of a metal pan. And by the way, there is a pan called a sauté pan, and it is a skillet with a high straight sides and a cover, because it is meant for making a sauté like this, meant to braise. You brown in the pan, and then you cover it to cook it. So I brown the chicken. Now, this takes about 8 minutes altogether, I find. I've done this so many times, I can tell you, it takes about 8 minutes over the right medium-high heat. You don't want it too high because you don't want to burn anything. Let the oil shimmer. Heat it till it shimmers. And then put the salt and pepper chicken skin side down in the pan and do not move it, at least for 4 or 5 minutes. After 4 or 5 minutes, take a metal spatula and dislodge, if necessary. The fact is, if you've let it sit there without moving it, it should have formed enough of a crust that it will not stick to the pan. So this is the trickiest part. I know people brown chicken, and they say, but how do you make it so the chicken won't stick to the pan? Well, first of all, get the oil hot. And second of all, don't move the chicken for at least 4 or 5 minutes. And then do it gingerly to see if it's going to dislodge easily. I use my metal, you know, hamburger turner-type spatula, and I manage to do this. And I flip it over. And probably after 5 minutes, it's not going to be browned as enough as you want. But put it on the non-skin side for 2 minutes. And then flip it back to the skin side and finish browning it. And when it's all nice and brown, take the chicken out. I use tongs so I don't disturb the skin. And I take it out and put it aside. And now what you have is some fat in the pan into which, and also the whatever did brown, so that's called a fond, F-O-N-D, which is the basis of your sauce. So into that pan, I now put 3/4 cup of white wine. If it's this is, by the way, 4 chicken thighs. If you're doing 6 chicken thighs, my pan will hold 6 chicken thighs. Then I'll put in a whole cup of white wine. And it will immediately, because you've been cooking over fairly high heat, it will immediately bubble up. And you will scrape the whatever's on the pan into it. And then I add either a sprig or two of rosemary, if I happen to have some fresh rosemary. I happened to have some fresh sage from Thanksgiving, which I didn't use. So the other day I put in a big sprig of sage into the white wine and a couple of large cloves of garlic, which I just smashed slightly with the heel of my hand. Actually, I did that while peeling it. And put those in, just whole like that. And then let that simmer a minute or two. And then put the chicken back in, cover the pan, and let it simmer very gently for about a half an hour. And uncover the pan. If, by the way, you notice that the liquid is still a little too much, it should reduce a little bit over the time. You can put the cover of the pan slightly askew, and you will, you know, evaporate. Or in the end, you can take the chicken out and reduce the juices in the pan. And that's my most basic chicken sauté. And the sauce will be not overwhelming amount of sauce. You just want enough sauce to flavor, sauce each thigh. And believe me, the chicken itself will give off some juices as it cooks. So it'll be enough sauce. As I said, you just want a spoonful on each thigh. So now, variations. I said, you know, you could have rosemary, or you could even use dry rosemary if you have. You could use thyme, that's nice. This is the same method that I use to make chicken cacciatore, as we say in English. It's chicken alla cacciatora, in the hunter style. Except that after the chicken is browned, I add canned tomatoes, which I mash up with a fork in the pan. I have nice wooden forks that do this very well. You can use a potato masher. Mash up some tomatoes. Let's say, you know, a half of a large can of tomatoes. That's it's more than a cup. It's 14 ounces of tomatoes. You don't need much juice, but some juice. And mash it all up. I would put in either a big pinch of oregano or some rosemary and put the chicken back in the pan and simmer that in the tomato sauce until it's all done. Now, in Rome, you would add, and I have done this, I love to do this, especially, I mean, you add roasted peppers. Now, I do not use jarred or I actually bought some, in quotes, homemade roasted peppers the other day. They were terrible. And I don't bother, but I do roast my own peppers. As I said, I've been, for some reason, here at the end of November, getting good roasted, good peppers. So that's Roman style. But I laugh whenever I say this because, you know Sophia Loren wrote two cookbooks?
I believe anything she would have done.
Right. Well, when she was pregnant with Eduardo Ponti, who is the director of the film, the new film that she's in on Netflix, which I recommend, although I'm not raving about it, because anything Sophia Loren does is wonderful. So Sophia Loren wrote a cookbook while she was pregnant with Eduardo, because she'd had some miscarriages. Now, Eduardo must be in his 40s. I have to look at the copyright on the book. And she was bedridden. She was told to take to bed if she wanted to hold on to this pregnancy. And what is she going to do while she's sitting there in bed? She wrote a cookbook. Now, the thing is, Sophia Loren really does cook. And by the way, there are a number of movies in which she is cooking, and you can tell she just it just looks natural, and it was because she did cook. And in the book, she says, "Well, if you want your chicken alla cacciatora to taste really Neapolitan, you have to add roasted red peppers." So I've bounced this off of my many Neapolitan friends, all of whom cook, or at least are connoisseurs, or men who don't, you know, Italian men who don't cook are the severest critics. So even them, they say, no. In Naples, we don't put red peppers in our cacciatore. They only do that in Rome. And the only reason that Sophia Loren puts it in hers is because she's not really from Naples. She's from Pozzuoli. That's like saying she's not really from Park Slope. She's from Fort Greene. She's from the next neighborhood. To go from Naples to Pozzuoli, which is, in fact, the very next municipality, all you do is go through like a little traffic tunnel. And then you come out the other end, you're in Pozzuoli, but you couldn't tell the difference. But, of course, food-wise, you can. I know somebody who claims he can tell what neighborhood in Naples he is in. It's got to be on a Sunday. By the smell of the Sunday ragu. That's how different it is from one neighborhood to another, that it would smell differently. All right.
Now, I wanted to tell you something.
So, by the way, here's one more chicken sauté. This one I'm actually going to do tomorrow. I'm going to make another sauté tomorrow. I have other things on my mind today. I have some very good stash of dry porcini, so I'm going to make one with dry porcini tomorrow. I'm going to use white wine, but I'm going to add some of the porcini cooking liquid, rehydrating liquid, you know, the water you use to rehydrate the mushrooms. And instead of whole cloves of garlic, which, by the way, I like to eat at the end. They get soft, and I eat them. I'm going to put in some chopped garlic. I already had this in my head.
All right, now,
and maybe at the end, a tablespoon of tomato paste. You know, I'm big on that.
Yeah. Now, I will tell you, roasted peppers, okay?
Yes.
There is a company that makes very good roasted peppers in my...
I don't care. I'm not buying them.
Mancini.
I bought them. Please.
I like Mancini.
No, you know, here's what you do. It's nothing to do. I shouldn't say that. It is something to do. I put the peppers directly on the rack,
yeah.
450-degree oven. Depends on the peppers. Could take anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes. If you feel like you can turn them at some point. But they will become charred. This is the easiest way I know to make roasted peppers. And they will become charred and softened, if not soft. And then you put them in a big pot with a cover on and let them sit until they get cool. They will soften in their own heat, and the skins should come right off, those charred skins. And you open up the pepper, and you scrape out the seeds, and there you go. It's a roasted pepper.
All right. I just remember
cut it into strips and put it into your chicken sauté, or we just like them as is with oil and garlic, or just salt and garlic and oil and Sometimes we eat them with tuna fish.
They're good with anything.
Yeah, they're great.
They brighten the flavor of anything.
I agree, but not Mancini ones.
Okay.
So I know those Mancini. No, I've tried a lot. In fact, I threw out some recently because I was making, and I haven't done this in a few weeks, maybe a month or more, this frittata recipe that I found, which has a lot of cheese in it, but also it was meant to be like a imitation of pimento cheese, but a frittata. Yeah. So you added a small jar of, in fact, Mancini pimentos, but they were so horrible, I said, I can't use these in my nice frittata. The first time I did use a different brand, but so I put real roasted peppers in it. It was so much better.
Yeah, there's nothing.
I will roast you a pepper someday, and when the world changes and we can travel again.
There's a great place in Torrington, Carbone's Market, that makes fresh roasted peppers, and
there you go. So I would buy those,
and they put them on their subs. It just makes, they just make the best sub-reason.
But let me say, the peppers are going to be terrible any minute. They're not going to be worth eating any minute. And then they have those Holland peppers, which are like $5 each. I would choke rather than pay $5
for
a pepper.
That's right.
And I would choke on it, I would. So, but I've been lucky. And then, in fact, I think I mentioned earlier that my neighbor downstairs told me they even had good red peppers at our farmer's market this past Saturday. But I expect that's over. It's now pouring here. I don't know what's doing.
It's darkened up, and we're getting on and off rain. But if it's pouring there, then you're going to pretty much stay pouring for the rest of the day.
Yeah, we are. Which is why I have several cooking projects in mind.
All right. Well, cook away.
Well, what else is there?
I know.
Well,
there is nothing.
I'm one of these days. I will share with you the research I did on. I'm upgrading my kitchen. After 10 years, it's been 10 years already since I renovated it, and it needs a paint job at the very least. But I'm going to change out some appliances. So if there's anybody out there who's had fabulous appliance experience, mainly I'm talking about gas ranges, or really horrible, I'd love to hear from you. Mavensmail@AOL.
There you go, Mavensmail@AOL.
Okay, take care, everybody.
Okay,
have a
Arthur,
great week.
Have a great week. We'll speak to you next week.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio and the Robin Hood Radio Network. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.